Train Shuffling is brought to you by our wonderful patrons. If you'd like to buy a share of Train Shuffling, visit us at patreon.com/trainshuffling.
Enjoy the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Train Shuffling. I'm Eric Hayden.
And I'm Johnny Hollander.
And we are live recording from Marlboro, Mass at TotalCon 2023. And we've got a couple of guests here that we're going to be talking with in a little bit. They came in to play train games with us at the con, so that's exciting.
Yeah. This is day two.
And kind of the end, right? We came in on Thursday night. We played all day yesterday, Friday, and then today we played 1880. The day before that, we played 1817. We did 1862. We've had some Euros and some card games, and kind of on the tail end of things now, but it's been a good time.
Yeah, it's been a good time. We spent most of our first day, 12 hours, playing 1817. This was Eric's attempt to woo me or convince me again that 1817 is a game worth playing. He did say that it wouldn't be 12 hours this time.
We played for 10 hours and 23 minutes. 12 hours was the time between when we set the game up and when we broke it down.
Yeah.
So I will say, haha.
Yes.
If we don't need to eat, then we can play
right,
in 10
hours. If we don't need to eat, go to the bathroom or anything, then it's a 10 and a half hour game.
Yes.
But joking aside, I did like it this time. I had a good time with
it. I'm very happy to hear that because I'm not going to stop pushing it, man. It's so good.
I mean, you're probably going to get me to play it like once a year. Because that's a long time. But
Yeah, and I guess without too much ado, we're going to chat with a couple of the guys who came to visit and play with us. That's Dan Domi and Spencer Slow.
We only have two mics, so we actually have like a new setup
excited about our gear.
Yeah, so we just got this like portable mixer. It's got like all these onboard editing and effects and stuff, and like most of it doesn't work right now. We kind of got a defective unit, but it does at least record the tracks that we want to record, and we got that intro music playing directly through it, so that was cool.
Yeah.
But we have two mics right now, and basically what we're going to do here is I'm going to tap out so Eric can talk briefly with Dan and then Spencer, and then I will return and we'll dive a little bit into our thoughts on the games. I'm sure Eric will share some of his as he's talking with Dan and Spencer, but because of the two mic situation, we're going to do it that way, so I will be back later.
Okay. And let's talk. All right. I'm here with Dan. We've shuffled around.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. So you traveled in from pretty far, actually, right? Like you came from Michigan?
Yep. Outside Detroit area.
Yeah. That's awesome. I'm super excited that you thought it was worth coming. Actually, we made a couple jokes several times. Why don't you tell everybody, you know, why the main reason you came here?
Yeah, so basically this is the most elaborate pickup of a board game that's ever been done because Johnny and I have been in touch, and I was able to buy you guys' extra copy of 1848, which I've been looking for a while, but didn't want to pay retail price. Anyway, he said, we worked out the deal, and he asked, I guess not knowing where I lived, if I was coming to TotalCon. And I knew from you guys that that was in this area. And I said, I don't know. And then I thought about it a little bit. Yeah, why not? I'll go over to Massachusetts and go to a small convention, which are the best types of conventions.
Yeah, it is. It's a cozy convention. So this is effectively the most elaborate way to save on shipping that we can
totally
come up with.
I totally saved on shipping by booking a flight and a hotel.
Yeah. That's great. I love it. So you got in kind of Friday night and we were in the middle of a game and you kind of sat with us.
No,
while
it was,
we did 62.
It was Thursday night.
Thursday
right?
night. I'm sorry. Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. But you hung out with us while we like finished our game of 62.
Yeah, one of my favorites.
Yeah. Yeah. And Spencer and I were in that and we did just awfully, but had a good time hanging out with you. And then we played a 9 a.m. start because we got to bed at like 1 in the morning.
Yeah, that one ran abnormally long.
Yeah, so we played 1817. So what did you think about 1817? You actually, notably, Dan, if you've heard us talk about 1817 on the podcast. You've heard us talking about Dan D's video on the rules for 1817 on the Bankruptcy Club website or the YouTube channel.
Yeah, right.
So thank you for putting that out there. First of all, it's the best rules video that exists on an 18XX game, in my opinion.
Oh, wow. That's saying something.
I think it is. And well, and for one of the meatiest games that is really hard for people to get into. And I honestly, I've said this to you earlier, I wouldn't be playing 1817 if it wasn't for that video, because it helped me digest the rules a lot easier than reading the rules. Mm-hmm. And then once I watch the video, you can go back and parse through specifics in the rules and look at reference sheets and things like that. So,
well, first off, that's very humbling and thank you. But also, yeah, I wish that I had just a little bit more control over the video itself so that I could put in like timestamps, you know, how you can fast forward to a section, because I do have title cards for different parts of the game. Not to criticize them in the
The timestamps are nice.
Yeah.
So you did the rules video on it, but when was the last time you actually played it in person? Was it in person or online, I guess?
1817. The last time that I played it in person was probably when I played it in Chattanooga at the annual rail convention down there.
Do you do that every year?
No. I went kind of like as a one-off thing because I'd heard of it before. And that was a really good trip. I got to meet a lot of the people who I'd interacted with in the online communities. Randy taught me 1862. I forget who took the lead on teaching me 1817, but that was back before the reprint. So it was still kind of this big mythical game, right? Yeah, so... I definitely wanted to try it. It's definitely got a convention game feel to it.
Yeah. You know? It's a big thing. And
All day affair.
And I like it for the con setting, and it's great that way. So,
though I would say don't rule it out for home play, because as I said yesterday, if nerds are willing to sit down for the Lord of the Rings trilogy marathon, you know, they can sit down for an 1817 game to completion.
Right. Yeah. And you had a pretty epic, I do want to highlight that. So in 1817, we played, so it was a 10 hours and 23 minutes of play time. And somewhere in there, probably around the 3/4 mark, Dan was in a pretty tough spot. He had two different companies with four different loans apiece. They were the 2 5-share companies with four different loans apiece. So almost max loans in both, and then decided to merge them to try and get himself out of trouble. And ended up with a 10-share company with 8 loans and a decent train, enough that it was
a permanent 5.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much all it had. It had a 5 and 2 3s, and I was hoping for dear life that I would get a run out of the 2 3s.
Yeah. And then everybody in that next stock round started shorting him, and we all kind of felt really bad about it. But we were this is free money. We need to do this, I think. And I kind of passed, and Johnny passed, and then somebody did it. And then we were like, oh, okay. And we all started to short him. And
pulled the ripcord.
Yeah. And then Dan, like, very, you know, didn't like lose his shit or anything, which, like, kudos to you, because it was definitely like a tilty moment that you were within your rights to be like, get up and walk away. And I hate this. But instead of that, you like took loans and you sucked in 10 shares or something to the company and started paying out. And I know this is like not, you know, for experienced players of 17, they'll be like, yeah, this is like kind of this is what you do. But for us, it was pretty fun to watch. As we all had to pay for the shorts that we, you know, we're paying for these $55 shorts that we got. Mm-hmm. And we paid multiple times. I paid like $40 a share or something like 5 times. And then, and slowly Dan is crawling his way back and making a ton of money, and then ends up, I'm in last place and he beats me. You know, I thought he was dead last, and I was,
yeah.
And it moved forward. You came in second to last?
Yeah.
You beat me. Yeah. I came in last. We swapped places.
So if we rewind to that stock round where all the stuff went down after I merged, if I remember correctly, the merged company did not have a terrific stock price to begin with. It was like maybe 60, 55, I want to say. So by that logic, I figured nobody's going to want to short it because they're not going to get that much money out of it. Because you know, it's a short is an inherently risky thing to do no matter what.
Especially with a permanent train.
Yeah. So it's gonna survive, you know, possibly, or I shouldn't jump to that conclusion, but it had a very nice route too. It went, yes. It had Chicago to Boston and New York, a whole bunch of revenue centers. It was a pretty good route.
Yeah.
Especially with a 5 train.
All right. This is Johnny. I don't want to jump in because I'm hearing the story and there's a key detail. I was the first one to short your company and you had not merged yet. I shorted the J because I needed exactly $65, which is where the J was. And the J did not have a permanent train. The BNA did.
Right.
And so I did it just to get enough money I needed to do the thing. And that set off a cascade of everyone shorting you to death.
Right.
And then you merged.
I remember when I merged, there were plenty of shorts of both companies.
That's true.
Yeah. I guess a bit of revisionist history. 12 hours of game will do that to you. But
Johnny was definitely the bad guy.
But then you became the bad guy at some point later. I can't remember why, but so I committed the cardinal sin of 1817, which is don't have an emotional reaction to your company being shorted, because 9 times out of 10, it's a purely utilitarian business type decision. Somebody needs some money and they're just evaluating the companies and, you know, you're just running a company and you're trying to do the same thing. But the main thing that I've been building the whole game has, and in my view, was now set up to do fairly well once I can take care of these pesky loans, which clearly everybody can see I'm about to do.
They're bright red, staring across the table. Everyone's looking at this huge pile of debt, and we're like, okay, that's a target.
Are you making blood ice cubes over there? Yeah. No, that's just my loans.
Right.
So I don't know how it happened, but I had just enough to take on the maximum 10 loans and buy back just enough of my shares to get the holy grail of having 100% ownership of the company in itself.
Right.
And at the one point, loan interest was set at $35 per loan.
And you had 8 of them, or 10 or something.
I had 10 of them.
You didn't take all 10.
I had 10 of them, and my run was for 35 share. So
if I run enough
and pay out, the owner, make a ton of money. The company just kind of treads water, and then I'm bleeding money from everybody who's shorted me.
Right, until all the interest, the interest came back up.
But, yeah.
So yeah, that was an epic game of 17, and we played all the way to like buying the eight train, which is not something that we like. Last time we didn't achieve that. We got to like the last year when we played this at the con, me, Johnny, and Len. So that was a great experience.
Well, we were going to call it early. You proposed that, and everybody kind of
we were all close enough. We had like there were several people that were close enough that we I think felt kind of compelled to keep playing because there wasn't a clear winner necessarily.
Yeah, we felt like it'll reach a point where we kind of know and then we'll just call the game there. But that point never came. Everybody was interested until the point we realized it's not worth it to call. We're just going to say
let's
what 20 minutes
these last few rounds.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
So 17, and then last night we did a couple of easy card games after that because we were kind of burnt out from a long day.
Yep.
And then this morning at 8 a.m., we convened for a six-person game of 1880.
My first play.
Your first play of 1880. Oh, I didn't know that. I thought it was... that's true. You didn't. You were watching the rules videos. Yeah, you and Spencer were both at least reviewed or watched the rules videos. And then we started kind of without much of a... like, you know, typically Eric likes to do sort of a rules view. We sat down and he was like, okay,
here we go.
Up. Yep. You know, and we got going and that took us around 6 hours, I think, to maybe 6.5, which was a bit on the long side, but mostly because of a major gaffe that I had where I had incorrectly capitalized a company early, bought a train with money I wasn't supposed to have, then ran the route and it was doing really well. And then everyone kind of went like, wait a second, how do you have so much money and you're going to, I was about to get $500 more.
No, somebody bought one of your shares and then that capitalization card came up. Yeah, I was like,
it's like, what's this?
What's this doing here?
Yeah.
The problem was when most people took the other 50% of their capitalization, you kind of did so at the same time because you're sitting on the far side of the table and the light green card is showing, and you had the slightly darker green company.
Right, and I said, oh, green, I get $500, yay. And I just took it. And then anyway, we spent like a half an hour or 25 minutes like unwinding that and fixing all the ripple that it had. And I think we got it all. I was actually pretty impressed.
Yeah, honestly, I thought you were just going to settle and put a huge asterisk by the entry. I was surprised we were able to back it all out.
Yeah. Yeah. The memory, everyone's paying enough attention that usually something, as long as it's not like, you know, you can get it close enough. You can fix it enough to where it's like, this is not, because that would have been completely like, call the game. It's unfair. No way, you know. Yeah, the spreadsheet that we were running helped correct this too, because we were able to see what we had going. So Eric was running the spreadsheet, so we had the exact values. So what were your impressions of 18? Your first play of 1880, six players, no loss.
Yeah, yeah. I know what game to turn to for a high player count, or at least one of the candidates. There might be others, but it's got that Lonnie feel to it. Some operational mindset with a little bit of trying to do the limbo at the same time. And yeah, it's weird because 1880 is such a highly regarded game, but no one really explained beyond the concept of maybe foreign investors, like some of the chrome, if you will, of the game. So I really didn't know what to expect other than it's probably going to be a really good experience, you know, which it was.
Yeah. I think the main thing that I think of when I think of the weirdness of that game is the way the stock market works.
Right. There's no operating rounds.
There's no, yes.
It's just a constant operating cycle.
Yes.
At various points, you stop and have stock rounds.
Right. And that's very foreign and very unique and different and super clever. I like the way that it works a lot. And it can lead to really dynamic moments where you, surprise stock round. There were two companies that ran between now and the last stock round, and those ones paid and they will have money and no one else will. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that feels kind of random, but then you realize that you can actually like intentionally steer the game towards those moments.
Right.
And I'm not there yet. I can't quite do that. This was my fifth play. Johnny's played, I think, nine times. And
Rocket Man.
Yeah. Rocket Man. Yeah. And Eric B, who was helping us run the game, obviously very well. He's played, I think that was his 30th play or the 29th. So, so we were playing in some of the best company that you can have for steering the game and, you know, operating without coffee in some parts of the game. And, you know, it's a long game. We're all just trying to get through it while our brains are sizzling. I think we had a couple of moments where like, guys, shut up. Like, I can't think because I'm trying to add my root.
That definitely contributed to the 6 hour time that we spent on it. I think, If we were a little bit less fried, probably be closer to five.
Yeah, we've been a little social too, you know, like chatting to us and other people. So
we were very loose with our focus. But coming in with this being my first play of it, I was very intimidated because the constant fear approaching a new game, especially in a con setting where you've invested some time and effort to get here along with everybody else around the table. I'm coming into this new game. I know nothing about it. I'm going to make a crucial mistake in round one or two, and I'm just going to get crushed. I'm not going to have any fun.
Yeah.
That has happened to me on certain unnamed games. Yeah. But I did take my fair share of suggestions from Eric B.
Yeah.
But otherwise, other than a couple strategy hints, like, hey, maybe don't go towards these mountains. You might want to go in that direction.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I felt like it wasn't a particularly punishing game. It's just like a very... There's a lot to explore, and it's not going to completely destroy you.
It's got the opposite thing as some 18XX have, where they will punish you for not knowing how to do things just right, or like Antiquity or something like that, if you're playing like a splatter. That game, if you don't know how to play it, it kills you, and you lose the game.
Exactly.
This game, you do great, and if you know what you're doing, you do fantastic. You know, like, so, and all the punishment in 1880 is watching other people ride off into the sunset, you know, like... And you're kind of doing mediocre, but it's fine, you know?
Right. You still have opportunities to improve what you're doing.
Yes.
And you still have a solvable problem.
That's more fun, right? Exactly. It's more fun. And like yesterday, you with the 1817, you took that like bad position. And like I said, instead of walking away and flipping the table, you were like, this is a personal challenge and a puzzle for me. I'm going to make this work. And you were like, at some point, like, I'm paying out and you guys are all paying me on these shorts, like eat that, you know, and it's like, it's rewarding and more fun that way when you have something to work toward. Although 1880 is the opposite, where it is totally punishing you. This is much more friendly.
I will say, you meant to say 1817.
I did. What did I say? 70?
You said 80.
1880.
Yeah, 1870 is clearly the more punishing one. And I've been in the same situation as yesterday where, you know, my first game of 1817 was like 3 hours long. For everybody else in the game, it was seven because I was bankrupt, you know, when the fours or whatever came out and learned some lessons. And that's something you have to be prepared to do no matter how much you try and learn some stuff ahead of the game. You're probably going to bankrupt at some point in your first couple. And I still thought there was a pretty good chance I was going to go bankrupt. But once you have that, once you have nothing to lose,
you can
do anything.
And so like Eric says all the time, Eric B says, I'm not referring to myself in the third person. he likes to say experience is the best teacher, right? And it totally is in these games. You can read those rules, think you have them internalized, and then you sit down and make a few mistakes and you realize how bad you messed up, and you have a couple hours to sit and think about how not to do that again. And then next time around, you tend to avoid them. So,
It's also a good group of players that we had too. Like if I shot myself in the foot, it's very, I've been in the situation where I do that and then like mentally I just check out, even if I'm still technically in the game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's not nearly, because I'm not learning anything, I'm not having any fun, I'm just like, man, why did I do that?
Right.
But no, I think even if I had gone bankrupt, I would have stayed there and spectated.
Yeah.
Or, that's cool. Or made comment.
That's so good to hear. I'm glad. Yeah. Well, it was, you know, Johnny and I think we're both a little nervous. We're like, I hope these guys who are traveling from out of state, or, you know, both of you from out of state, are gonna like have fun and not have like a couple bad, because you can have bad runs pretty easily with these games. So that's been great.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good to hear. I think with that, we'll probably wrap, and then we'll talk with Spencer for a little bit. So thanks for coming out, Dan. That was awesome. And thanks for talking with us. Okay.
Yep. I'm always up for game online. So
all right.
Reach out.
All right. Thanks.
It's Johnny. Eric and I swapped out, and we now have Spencer here. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So Spencer also didn't come from quite as far as Dan, but you did drive like 3 hours.
I drove 3 hours. Yeah. I live up by Woodstock in New York, in the Catskills, mountain man now. So wasn't too bad. I thought I was going to miss the con, because it was snowing, but thankfully the roads were all clear and was able to make it up here. So,
Yeah. The roads actually Thursday morning, even I have a 15-minute commute. I don't even know if I can call it a commute, and the roads were actually kind of bad. I was a little bit worried, but luckily all the snow came early in the morning and it was clear by the afternoon. So that was good. Super excited that you and Dan made it. There are a lot of people that play crayon rails here. We probably would have gotten a few 18XXs in, but I don't think it would have been nearly the same experience had you guys not come. It was awesome getting to play the games with you guys.
Oh, good. I'm glad you said it was a good one. I thought you were going to be like, oh, God.
So that was cool. So, yeah, I know Eric and Dan just kind of overviewed the two highlights of the con. I don't know how much of 17... you wanted to talk about how you felt about 17 or any moments that, you know, that stuck out for you?
Well, this was the first time I played it in person. So my history with 18XX is, you know, the first time I ever played was kind of a crazy experience. I was at HeavyCon Heavy Cardboard, I think they call it HeavyCon, when they were in Denver. And I had been playing Euros for, I don't know, 12 hours straight, went to bed, woke up pretty bleary-eyed in the morning, and there's these guys hovered around this huge table, and they had this gigantic game going, and they said, hey, we need a... I walked by, I said, hey, what's this? Oh, it's 18XX, we're playing 22. You know, are you interested? And I was like, well, I don't know how to play. And they're like, well, we need a six, why don't you come join us? And next thing I know, I was playing for 12 hours, playing 18-22, and I had a blast. I really enjoyed it. I didn't do very well. Had some really nice coaches helping me through, but got the bug and the itch at that point and played a couple games in person, played a couple games of 1889. But then when the pandemic hit, that's when my gaming group got into it online. So I haven't really had a chance to play in person, played some 1817, probably like four games, but this was my first in person.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I didn't know what to think. You know, obviously playing async online is a lot different than playing in person. I think we were talking about this earlier, where you just miss that social aspect and the camaraderie and all the good stuff that comes with a fun game that you're playing. And it was really nice to get involved with a great bunch of guys and just play for 12 hours. And it was a lot of fun. I understood what was going on a lot better. I don't think you can grok things as well when you're just playing online and you're kind of paying attention and not really, like, you're focused, you're in there. And I really enjoyed it. I had a great time.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. I'm glad to hear that. I know we've talked a little bit about my experience with 1817, which was a year ago. I played for the first time, and I don't really play online. I've done a handful of games on Dot Games and before that Board 18, but I really cooled on online games very quickly, because a big part of the gaming experience for me is sitting around the table with the beer and your friends and playing, and so much of that is lost that what's left, which is the game itself, which I obviously love the game, but that's not enough for me. So I haven't done any online 18. I did one online 1817 a couple years ago, three players. And then since then, I haven't played it. And then last year was basically the first time in several years that I played it. And it was Eric, Len, and I. We were all basically brand new to it. Eric may have played it online at that point. Had you?
I did some stuff with Kyle.
Right, yeah. Eric had done some stuff with Kyle, who's a pro at this. So, Eric was the most experienced. Len and I were both basically brand new. Len may have played a little bit online as well. And we played through, and at about 8 hours, I was like, I'm starting to fade a little bit. I think we should just call it and do something else. And, Eric and Len were like, no, let's keep playing. And I was like, okay, 10 hours. I was like, guys, like, I don't know. We played, I think, for close to 12 hours, but we didn't even come close to finishing. We were at, like, the sixes. So we had a couple hours left, probably. My tipping point in that game was when Len just started shorting me over and over, which Dan is familiar with. I didn't take it as well as Dan took it. and part of it was because it was like a, it wasn't for utility. Like, we talked about how shorting is utility. You do it because you need the money. It's a good target. And in our game, it was more of like Len and I were the two in contention for winning. And it was a strategy to knock me down, which I don't know if it's, I've heard it, that's not really an effective way to use shorts, because they're on the hook for money and things can not go the way you expect. But I just didn't take it in stride. I was like, all right, I'm done with this. 12 hours into it, and now this is happening. And I didn't want to play 17 again, which really bummed Eric out.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. I've been in those situations before, not with an 18XX, but I do remember I played Twilight Imperium 3rd Edition like 10 years ago. And that's a long game if you haven't played it before. It's pretty chaotic. And there was one point when I just remember I'd been waiting an hour and a half to take my turn because there's five other players around the table, and the guy to my right, his name was Saul, and I love this guy. I play games with him all the time, but he played this card that skipped my turn, and so I had to wait another hour and a half before I could do anything in the game. And that drove me crazy, right? Because there was no rhyme or reason to what was going on. I think in 1817, when you're shorted, unless it's a pile-on and it's just people being silly, but usually people are doing it to gain money, to buy stocks or whatever. So it's not as easy to get angry. I mean, you're going to get emotional about it because you've invested all this time, but right. At least in this point, it's justified in a certain way. Right. So it's not, you can't get as angry with it as I was at Twilight Imperium, which I've never played again.
Yeah. And in 17, first of all, that sounds so brutal.
It was so bad.
I played Twilight TI3 years ago, actually with one of Eric's old friends from high school friends. And
preschool.
Yeah. Wow. From preschool. And I did not like TI3. There was a lot of, I don't remember the details. I only played it once, and I just remember saying like, oh, Twilight Imperium, not for me. And I remember saying like all the things that I didn't like about it. And then TI4 came out. I actually really liked TI4. It fixed a lot of the issues I had, but we've played it a few times. We were doing like a kind of an annual thing, and six players, we thought like the big epic game. And I actually think I prefer that game at like four, because I can get a four-player game done in like 4 hours, but then you add two players and it becomes like a 12-hour game for us anyways, yeah. for our group. It's crazy how quickly that game escalates in the amount of time it takes to finish it. But Eric is very, very, very anti Twilight Imperium. And I did cool on it because I didn't want it to be a 12-hour game. So I actually ended up getting rid of my copy. But that's besides the point. I thought your story about TI3 was pretty funny. But with 17, you're right. Like, shorting is not... It's not a personal attack. And like you said, if people are goofing around or they don't really understand and they think it's just... I feel like when you're new to 17, maybe you treat it the same way you treat... like a stock round of 1830, where you're really trying to like knock people's values down to jockey for position, or because you're that close in position and buying a share and then selling it may actually make a difference. Yeah. Shorts don't seem to be like that in 17. It seems like you don't really want a short unless you need the money for something. Like, you have a cert limit, right? If you can't buy a share with that money, you're not going to be shorting somebody. Right, like you're really only going to be.
Depends who you're playing with, though. I mean, you could be playing with a bunch of jerks, and then they all just short you for no reason.
Exactly, and that's what I don't like is that I don't like that there's that possibility. But if you're playing with people that understand what the game is about, I don't think that will happen as often.
Yeah,
maybe with new players or people that are just jerks, like you said. But I think that from my first experience, Len wasn't being a jerk, but it was like I don't like the shorting mechanism because we have an hour and a half stock round, and it feels very arbitrary. Like, I'm just going to ding you and ding you and ding you. And maybe it works. Maybe I can pull a Dan and make him pay for it. But I didn't like that. But this time, it wasn't like that. I mean, we did pile on Dan, but it started off with, and I don't remember how it turned into let's all short Dan, because I know that the first short that I took, I needed exactly that amount of money. And it was the company least likely to punish me for it in dividends at the time. He merged it. He made it into a monster that did punish us for it. So I don't remember exactly the path that led down to it, but...
Well, I remember that you needed cash to do something, which is the reason that you did it. I remember I bought it because I wanted a stock the next round. And then I think I was the first to short his other company because I saw the writing on the wall and knew that he had to merge. And I saw that the stock value was going to be low. And so I just went in and was like, okay, I'm going to short B&A. And I think that also set off some other shorts that went on with the red company.
It did, and you know what I'm remembering now? We also all misread the game state. We thought there was no way the company didn't liquidate.
That's right.
At the end of like the first operation after we shorted.
Yep.
So we were like, oh, this is like punishment free because he is not going to be able to do anything. He's going to go into liquidation. The company's not going to exist. He's going to have to pay for 10 loans or whatever. And, you know, he's going to be really unhappy, but we're all getting out scot-free. And obviously, we were totally wrong about how that was going to play out.
Well, Dan was like the batter with two outs, bottom of the ninth, and you're just like, this guy's going to whiff or ground out. And his team just kept getting singles, getting on base, and he did the comeback. It was super impressive, impressive.
That was a lot of fun. I don't think I would have handled it as well. I'm really glad Dan did, because it was a learning moment of what can happen when you short a company to death, and it was really cool to see.
And I, for what it's worth, I really enjoyed 1817. I've played a few games that have gone on that long, mostly Civ games. So I think the last time I played a 12-hour game was Mega Civ, which was probably 12, 14 hours. But in that game, too, I was tired and fatigued. I think the gentleman who was sitting to my left even said, listen to me, Eric, I'm using words, because we were just so... like foggy in terms of trying to communicate with one another. But I was engaged the whole time. Mm-hmm. And definitely the same, you know.
I think that was Len that said
Len. Yes, he did. And very funny. I even wrote it down on my phone. I thought it was a great moment. But it was very engaging. I really liked it. It's definitely not a weeknight game for me. It's definitely an event game. And I would certainly play it again. Had a great mm-hmm. time.
Yeah. Same. You know, I hesitate to say convert because I'm not like champing at the bit to like keep playing it over and over. Like some of the guys that play 17 and just fall in love with it, it's their favorite game. But I did really, really like it, and I will be happy. I was very hesitant. You know, I not hesitant. I immediately agreed to do this, but I was wary about what the experience was going to be like. Now I'm very excited. Come back once a year and expect a 12-hour game of 17 and I know I'll have fun. So in that way, I'm a convert, but I don't have the love for it that people like Kyle and the Seattle group do. So
yeah, definitely a once a year type thing for me, yeah. But I had a great time.
So anyways, 17, great game. I want to talk about 80 because I'm gonna spoil it up front. I'm gonna do the Tarantino. We're gonna talk about the end and then go back and talk about the game. You first time playing 1880,
mm-hmm.
and you won against a total shark at that game. Eric Brocious has played 29 times, and I've played with him 9 times. I think I played with him every time I played it, and he has won 8. This was my 9th, so I had played 8 times with him previously. He'd won 7 of the 8 games. I won 1 of them. And it was a tough battle to finally earn that win after 8 games. And you came in brand new, and you beat everyone, including Eric Brocious. And that was really awesome.
Thank you. Thank you.
So what did you think of 80?
I really enjoyed it. I've been very interested in it for a while. I'm a big fan of Lonnie. And but after watching the video last night in my haze to get an understanding of really what was going on, I was worried about the pacing piece of it. So there's this effect, like I think you talked about it before with Dan or Eric was talking before, where there's no set operating rounds. You just operate, it triggers a stock round. And I think getting that timing right is really the key to the game. And so not that I was watching what people were doing and just trying to make sense of it. The rest of it was pretty straightforward to me in terms of what was going on, like route building, optimizing those routes, trying to get the most, you know, for your trains. The foreign investors was really interesting. Mm-hmm. So my strategy was, look, Beijing was a huge payout center, right? It paid out at 30, then 50, then 80. And I tried to get an official at a company that were close to that. And then held off from doing my investor as long as I could to get a war chest, and didn't get overly aggressive in terms of, like, that's what I think what I'm learning that I, if I could course correct in my 18XX, is like I sprint out really fast out of the gate, and then I kind of lose it around mile 12, right? Yeah. And then like I can't make it to the finish, and this one I just kind of held back.
God, that reference hits home for me so much because I ran a half marathon once and I felt like Superman for 12 miles and I walked the entire last mile. It was like a wall.
And I feel like I do that a lot at 18XX. Like I really do well in the beginning and then I get to the middle and I'm sort of like waffling a little bit and then I fall off and I just kind of paced myself the whole time. And then honestly, I think I just got really lucky just the way that the whole stock market hit and the payouts. Like, yeah. What happened was that there was a huge payout for me. I was running JHU. I thought I was doing a reasonable job of running it pretty well, had a lot of shares in it and got double payouts and just had enough money to fund a second company. And that kind of took me over the finish
line. So I think you're right. And I think that the other thing that really helped you maybe as much, if not more than that, was the way everybody got train locked when communism started at the fours. And so normally you get a few trains get purchased and that marker moves and it extends that operating round before a stock round happens. And in this case, because everybody was train tight, none of those trains were purchased. We entirely bypassed the fours. And then a couple of 4+4s were purchased, but that went so quickly that the sixes broke very early. And because of how quickly that happened, normally you're in that. So for those that haven't played it, when communism starts, the stock market shuts down and it reopens after the first six is purchased. And normally you have a little bit of time and companies take that opportunity to withhold a few times because you don't drop back in the stock market when you withhold during that period. It ended so quickly that companies hadn't had time to withhold enough to pay for their permanent trains. Mm-hmm. And Eric's company, the HKR, was one of those companies and he had to withhold a $500-something
yep.
payout. And you were full paying because you had already got your permanent at that point. Mm-hmm. And that was huge. That was, I think, the nail in the coffin for Eric when he had to withhold that $500-something payment.
Well, he only lost by $37. So right. It was still like,
it was very close, but he had a very, very strong start. And yes. I think that that was the difference there, him having to miss that one payout and drop back on the stock market instead of getting, you know, if he hadn't dropped back in value, he would have been in the next bonus, the plus 15 instead of the plus 10. So not only would he not have had to withhold the payment, his stock would have been more valuable and his future payouts would have been higher.
Yeah.
So it's like a triple negative when that happens. Wait, is it triple negative? Yeah, triple negatives is still negative.
I think the other thing too is that midway through, it looked like you and Eric B had double digits in terms of your stock portfolio and everyone else was in single digits. And then by me buying that second company at a 40% director's share, that also helped because I was able to get 16 stocks in a 12 cert portfolio. Yeah. And that also helped kind of propel me forward. But
yeah, you ended up with, I think, more in the last, whatever, 4 or 5 rounds of paying, you had like 4 more shares than even the next highest person or something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
And that was really, obviously, like you said, it was a $37 difference between you and second place. That made a big difference.
It was very, very, very close. Yeah. And that was after there was some shenanigans. Not too much. You know, it was very surprising, I will say. The whole weekend, there hasn't been too many stock shenanigans going on. And I don't know if that's a personality thing or it's just a smarter way of playing. But what I play with people online and my close circuit there, we are dumping stuff all over the place.
We just didn't play the games for that, right? We played very operational games. I know 17 has shorts and it seems like a very financial game. And it has a cool financial system, but it is an operational game at heart. 80 is another operational game. 62, also, you know, 62 is weird. I don't know how to categorize 62. But I don't think we've played the types of games where company dumps are really something you do to win the game. You know, there may be opportunities where that present themselves where dumping company may make sense, but I think it's less common in those games in general. So I don't think I personally love dumping companies on Eric. I really like games with stock shenanigans. 80 happens to be one of my favorites and doesn't feature that, but. I don't think it was the group. I think it was the games that we happened to be playing.
Got it.
I wanted to make a comment on 80 because we talked about the like lack of stock, you know, fixed number of stock or operating rounds in between stock rounds and the idea of being able to control that. And I kind of see that like controlling priority deal, right? Sometimes you can see an opportunity to jockey for a particular position in priority when it matters to you to be able to get the first buy in the next round or something. I think 80 is very similar to that. You cannot control everything that's going to happen. You can't control when somebody's going to buy a train or not buy a train unless you know that they're already train tight. But I think in that game, you learn to identify the opportunities where you can control something about that. And you have to identify those and take them to perform well at the game. And that's kind of what I see as kind of the heart of 80. Is being able to identify when opportunities present themselves and being able to capitalize on them.
I think it's a great way of saying it. Yeah, it's a timing piece, right? Yeah. It's like knowing when to perform certain actions while those operating rounds are going on, when to buy trains, when not, when are the stocks going to double pay versus single pay. That was above me, to be honest. I wish I had a better understanding of how that really worked. But I agree with you. It felt like the priority... the priority marker moving around and getting that priority for stock buys the next round.
Yeah. For the record, I came in second to last place, so it's not above me.
Maybe I'm being a little hard on myself.
Yeah. You won and are saying it's above you. I came in second to last place, and it was a close second to last place. I would say that Len and I were basically tied for last place.
I think I'll rephrase it. It's a very hard thing to grok. It doesn't mean you can't do it. I just think like you need a couple plays to really understand how that's working.
There are a lot of little systems interacting with each other in 80. It definitely does take several games. I mean, I've played 9 times and I question what makes sense when I'm doing it. And I'm like, I guess I'll find out if this is going to work. And, you know, most of the time it does. And sometimes you find something that works and you remember it and you apply that next time. But like, for example, in this game, I didn't buy any of the privates. I don't think I've ever started a game of 80 with all of my money. in a six player game, that's not all that much money. So maybe it's not as strong as it would be in a four player game or a three player game. But it did give me the opportunity to try a few interesting things. And I chose not to try that because I was afraid that it wasn't going to be powerful enough. And then I floundered kind of doing a standard thing instead.
Yeah.
And I kind of wished that I could have rewound the game, even if it wouldn't have worked any better, to just try the interesting thing and see if it would have worked. Because now I'm like, oh, am I going to end up in that opportunity where I can try this cool thing again? Maybe not. Maybe not for several more plays. Am I going to be able to maneuver my way into the same position? Or will it make sense for me to? Because I can just not buy privates in the next game I play. But am I going to give them away at a value that's too good for somebody else? Like, I'm not going to not bid on things if somebody's going to get a steal. So
it was interesting with the privates. One of the things that there was chatter around the table. There was a lot of people helping out, which was really nice, by the way. But I bought one private company that was allowed me to get a D permit. And I think there was a couple people who walked by and were like, oh, I can't believe you bought that. And I think that really helped me at the end of the game, which was it afforded me the ability to build routes with a company that was in a pretty powerful geographic position that wouldn't have been able to do that in the later round. So,
yeah, I think there's, I think 80 is not a game that many people have played a lot of times. You know, like most people are intimidated by its reputation being a long game, which it's really not when you know what you're doing and have a spreadsheet and kind of keep the game moving along. It's actually, this was the longest game I've ever had. I've never had a game go more than 5 hours before this one. This was six. We did have some unwinding and stuff. So it's I don't think it deserves its reputation for being a long and complicated game. So
it's like the Demacher of train games. Yeah. Like Demacher gets this rep of being, oh, it's 8 hours. No, it's a 4.5 hour game. Yeah. It's not really that bad.
So I think that my only point in that is I think somebody might have an experience once where they got that private and didn't perform well. And then they're like, oh, that private sucks. And that might not be accurate at all. I know Eric actually had that exact experience. He got that private once. It did not work out for him. He maybe didn't even feel like he needed to lay anything in D, and he's like, I just wasted, you know, I overpaid, whatever. I don't know exactly the scenario, but I think that's probably more what it is, because I actually think that's a very good private. It allows you to get a higher share density because you can start a private, you can start a company that doesn't need to have a D permit. So if you were going to get a BCD permit or something like that, you could get a BC permit, have an extra share in your presidency. And now you have that free D. Like, I think you just need to utilize it correctly.
You did it.
And you
Which
did.
Is right. That's right. Yes, exactly.
So, and I think all of, or at least most of the privates are like that. They're situational. You know, you could pay for the big ferry and then not start a company that benefits from the discount on river tiles. And then maybe you didn't get the value you should have gotten out of it. But that doesn't mean it was a bad private. So that's my view on that.
Well, overall, I had a great time playing. I really liked it, and I cannot wait to play again.
Yeah, me too. And I'm glad to hear you say that. And again, appreciate you coming all the way out here to play with us and for joining us on the show.
Sure thing. Till next year.
Yep, next year.
All right, we're back, and we have a special announcement. Dan wants us to announce to the world that his stock value in 1817 made its way back from 40 in liquidation up to 200
in acquisition.
Acquisition, not liquidation. $240 a share at the end of the game. That's a good metric. I'm glad we have that on record now.
I mean, all the double jumps and paying off 10 loans. Like, for those that haven't played 17, every time you take a loan, you move back on the market. And every time you pay a loan off, you move forward again. So if you pay off 10 loans, you move forward 10 spots. And then all of the payouts that he was doing to double jump, it was very impressive to go all the way from the backmost acquisition spot to 240, which was like the second or third most valuable company at the end of the game, I think, for share value.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. I guess we don't have a whole lot more besides the fact that we want to say we're excited about this new gear that we have. We're going to be, hopefully it should be a lot easier for us to put episodes out. It gives us the ability, most importantly, that we can now do this in person a lot easier. So that's exciting for us. And we're going to try and capitalize on that. And actually, pretty soon, it should allow us to do interviews and discussions with a guest in person a lot easier. And we have a lot of folks nearby that we want to pick at their brains and have them on the show too. So that's something to look forward to.
Yeah. It's been a barrier for anybody that's not, you know, that doesn't do this. If we want to get a remote guest on, we've got to tell them how to set up the software, how to make sure their sound quality is okay so we can get, you know, a decently sounding episode out, and then how to get the files to us. And depending on their level of technical ability, it can be a challenge. So This thing is like a self-contained, we record right onto it. It's got its own, you know, it's got a memory slot, and we can just have them come over and plug in all the mics.
Right.
And do this and have still good quality.
Yeah. So it's exciting. So look forward to that. And we apologize for the bit of absence that we've had on the show for a bit, but we have fully reinvigorated. We're super psyched. So
in our next, those in our Discord already know, we are like game or like book club for 18XX. Game club title. Yes, but it's like a book club, but we're doing it for games. I think we've already talked about it on the show, actually. Yeah. Was 18SY. We've played it once. We want to get a couple more plays in, but, you know, between the con, it not fitting into the schedule here and life, we've not gotten our subsequent plays in, so we want to play it like once or twice more, and then that will likely be our next episode.
We're going to do at least an initial impressions episode on that one. It could be because it, in general, has gotten some pretty bad reputation from the very limited. It's so niche. It's got, I wonder... I'm going to talk a little bit here as I bring up 18SY.
Yeah, like even within 18XX, it's like super niche because you have to get it from Japan.
And it's in Japanese and the rules are in Japanese. So I can't imagine a more niche thing, right? But if anybody is familiar with the podcast Hidden Gems, their whole shtick is that they review games that are like below 1,000, like the 1,000th game on BGG. And they find the hidden gems within that. And I'm failing to find this, but you know, they pull some great games out of there. And I feel like this is a hidden gem within 18XX. What is...
Where is
it? There's the number. Yeah, I'm looking for the ranking of 18SY on BGG. And, is that that's the year... This might be the year or the ranking. 2011?
That's the year.
That's the year. Yeah, that's the year. Anyway, it's a very low ranked game, and I don't think it deserves that. And I'm excited to get at least a couple people to check it out because it's a lot of fun, I found.
NA.
It doesn't even have a rating.
It has an average rating.
Maybe because not enough people have rated it.
A ranking.
So 17 people ranked it.
Yeah,
that's true. 17 people have ranked this game. So anyway, it's a lot of fun. We had a blast with it, and we played it wrong. We played a pretty important rule wrong.
Which one was that?
The one where a company can only run one type of train.
Oh, yeah.
So we had like and there's like a ton of three trains or something like that. I forget what it is exactly. It's been a month since
we played. And there's no train limit.
So we were just buying tons and tons of trains. It's pretty wacky.
Although we had fun the way we did it.
Yeah, it was fun. if anything, it's a fun variant. And it wasn't like a total shit fest. It wasn't like complete chaos.
It put a lot of pressure on the people that like Len had, like, I'm thinking if I'm recalling correctly, it was Len that had like a ton of trains. And we were like very much pressured to just push trains.
Len or Randy, I can't remember.
Because whoever it was, one of the two, was just going to run away with the game. And so it was a good kind of pressure, though. It was like a lot of fun. It made the game move very swiftly. And I'm actually a little hesitant
to try it the other way.
Try the other way because I feel like the game will take longer and be slower. And we had a great time the way it was.
Yeah, it was good. I had fun. So,
but we will play the correct rules next time.
Yes, we are going to revisit this. So anyway, thanks for listening to our Total Con 2023 episode. Thanks to the people who put this on and for letting us come and talk about it. So anyway, that's it. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Right. Night, everyone.
Remember to run your trains and pay your divs.
Oh, yeah. Run your trains and pay your divs.
Yeah.